Welcome to the Otherworlds GG Community Cast. This is episode number 53. I am table for two, and that is Mellified. How you doing, bud?
I am doing wonderful. How are you?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. It's a pretty good day, and I'm really looking forward to just chilling and talking shop.
All right. Well, we got a lot to talk about, it looks like.
We do. You know, it's interesting, you know, recently the Amazon Luna stuff has finally come out of its private spaces into the public sector, if you will, and you can now get in on that. And one of the things that I think that they're doing that is really smart is they're tapping into more of the retro games kind of like in their arsenal of library first before really going live. I think this is something that both Google Stadia and some others have probably kind of like, who was it? Apple, I think, or Netflix. Netflix was the other one that was trying to do something like this. I think this was the smart move for them to not just do some of the newer stuff, but really trying to go into the retro stuff, I think is a good selling point for them. And another thing that they just did is that Amazon Prime members can now play Devil May Cry 5 in their browser. So that's a thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. So this is using Luna under the hood, but they're giving a small selection of rotating games each month that you can play for free if you're a Prime member. Devil May Cry 5 is one of them. They've got a couple of others with the Amazon Prime. Let's look at what that list looks like. Oh, well, it's Flashback and Observer System Redux.
Well, it's just an interesting state of affairs to me because I've been starting to see slowly an increase in games that can just be played through a web browser, right? Like, I used to think it was pretty amazing that you could play emulators in a web browser, right? With some stuff that you can find, like archive.org and stuff like that. But, like, in here, you know, you can play EVE Online now in a browser. You can play, it's really incredible to me to see this new genre of gaming being done through web browsers. So, props off to, Game Pass X Cloud, the X Cloud stuff is done through a web browser, you know, or it can be. Yeah. So that's just, it's pretty incredible to see all that tech, but, speaking of tech, though, we're really looking forward to that Steam Deck, right? We're really wanting to,
for sure,
get our hands on that. You can now install Windows on the Steam Deck. So the Steam Deck has launched, and they've been sending them out. As a matter of fact, I think Gabe Newell went around his local area up there in Washington and handed out some of the first few decks in the local community there to some of the people who bought them, who lived up in Washington. He hand-delivered a few of them, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was neat.
But there was actually like a couple of people who were like, who are you? But then there's definitely a couple of people who are like, holy crap, you're Gabe Newell, you're at my front door.
Yeah.
For those who know, they know. And but yeah, so now that the deck is out, you can actually officially now install Windows on your deck, which is good. Because I mean, it was something they said that you'd be able to do, and it's good to see that they are following suit with that.
Yeah, it took a little bit, but they got it done, so good for them, and relatively quickly after launch.
Yeah, and speaking of launches, you know, with the chip market as it is, and with like the technology market as it is, the supply chains on getting things is really wild. Like, it's really hard to get access to certain stuff because it's hard for them to manufacture. But despite all that, NVIDIA is launching their RTX 3090 Ti supposedly. March 29th is when that is reportedly going to launch for them. I don't know how that's going to go over. I mean, I'm sure the bots will get all their hands on them first, but whatever.
Yeah. And it's a very expensive card, and we're going to see the 40 series coming later this year. So it's a little puzzling. You know, why do this at this late stage of the game? But I suppose there are some people that will, you know, buy it now and then upgrade in a year or whatever, if they have that kind of money.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I mean, NVIDIA might as well take their cash, right? It doesn't hurt NVIDIA.
Sure, and I mean, they're kind of staying supreme for what it's worth in a lot of these cases. I mean, like, AMD's got some random performance issues. Apparently, there's a fix that is still 2 months away.
Yeah, this has been frustrating. We've seen weird AMD CPU performance issues since Windows 11 really launched, and a lot of people thought it was Windows 11, but AMD did the investigation and realized it's actually the onboard TPM in the CPU, which of course was required for Windows 11. So a lot of people didn't have it turned on before, but everybody turned it on for Windows 11. And then it turned out there's a bug where it goes into a loop and gets stuck. And when that happens, the system grinds to a halt for a second and then, you know, kind of comes out of it and goes back to what it was doing. But that performance fix requires a BIOS update, and of course it takes a little while for those to get through the supply chain. Every motherboard manufacturer has to do their own version of it, so we're not expecting to see new BIOSes until May. And this is also frustrating because AMD just fixed a different performance issue with a BIOS update like in the last couple weeks, so definitely not a great experience as an AMD owner at the moment, but at least they're getting this stuff fixed, I suppose.
Well, and they're also getting ready to release a whole new motherload of Ryzen CPUs too. It looks like the 4000 5000 series CPUs are gonna start hitting the market pretty soon here.
Yeah, so they're dropping a bunch of new, I think 10 different SKUs are expected across the line, so filling in, I guess, some of the gaps and the pricing for their product line.
So let me ask you a question. If you were to pick a company, well, first of all, do you know what Bandcamp is?
Yes.
If you were to think of a company to buy Bandcamp, who do you think that would be?
Apple for iTunes, maybe Spotify. They're an independent publisher of music, right?
Yeah, well, what if I told you Epic Games bought Bandcamp?
Huh? Why?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure here either. According to what I was seeing, apparently they're going to be doing it with some other, they're going into some other direction with some music for their company. But I couldn't even begin to tell you what's the deal here. Maybe it could be. Well, I was thinking it could be a thing for, you know, like Unreal Engine. You know, now you have music you can put into your game. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, they did something similar. They bought a company in 2021 called ArtStation, which was for digital art, and you could buy, you know, and sell assets on that as a marketplace. So maybe they are kind of doing a push to have a marketplace for Unreal. Certainly Unity does that and has been very successful with it. Could be interesting.
So we've all had our ups and downs with thoughts on monetization and microtransactions, right?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, well, Sid Meier's weighing in on this now, and he's saying that monetization causes more, or at least causes some games to stray a bit further from the path. And, you know, he's probably right in a lot of ways, too, where you just see these monetization microtransactions trying to keep people in their games for as long as possible to try and milk as much money out of the consumer as possible with really not the heart and passion of providing great gameplay for their customers. According to an interview, I guess he did with the BBC, the real challenge and the real opportunity is keeping our focus on gameplay, you know, is what his thing is. And I agree.
Yeah. Well, he's one of the, you know, grandmasters of video game design. So, certainly, when he speaks, I hope people, you know, sit down and listen to what he's saying.
Yeah, I think people like him and Gabe Newell are like a couple of those people who've been in the industry for long enough doing really good things for gamers. Phil Spencer, I think, you know, I'd include in that council. You know, those are like three big names, I think, in the industry that if they're talking about doing good for the consumer, you should probably listen.
Yeah, that's like the Jedi Council of gaming, I suppose.
There's probably a few others you could throw in there, maybe. Like, you know, for the moment, those are definitely some of the three heavy hitters. But speaking of heavy hitters, there's been this ongoing thing for a while, and I think some people forgot about it. If you're really into the streaming world, maybe you're more aware of this than others. But I know Mellified can't really say too much about this because he actually works for Twitch. But Dr. Disrespect, supposedly, according to an official post he made on Twitter, said that he has settled his lawsuit with Twitch. Apparently, both parties are claiming neither have done anything wrong, which is legal speak for there was a settlement involved, and apparently he's moving on. He also went on to say that he's not going to be returning to Twitch, which is not a surprise to me. I think that'd be a foul decision at any rate. Like, I don't even know where that would have been on the table. You know, if he was in such a bad situation with them, why would he go back to stream for them, even if they settled a lawsuit in a positive light, right? Like, for him, right? Like, maybe Twitch came out and said, ooh, we did make a mistake and whatever, we'd love to have you back on the platform. I would still say no. Like, why would you move back after having such a foul thing go down when you've already started rebuilding your audience in another location? It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So good, bad, or otherwise, you know, he made a follow up statement saying that he wouldn't go back, which to I was like, yeah, that kind of seems like a duh statement. Like, yeah, like, why would you? In either way. But anyway, good for him. Whatever. Who cares? Moving on. Thanks. Let's put that to rest. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's kind of stupid.
Yeah, well, it's hard to get worked up over multimillionaire streamers,
especially when no one, at least no one's publicly said what it is. He hasn't said what the situation is. Twitch has not come out and said what the situation is. There was apparently like a person or two on Twitter, like when this all first broke, that said, I know what it is and it's very, very bad. But then no one said what it was. And so it's a whole big lot of like, it's a big deal about supposedly nothing at this point. So, you know, clearly there's no like cops getting called on the dock. So, I mean, you know, he's not going to jail or getting sued or getting arrested. I mean, so like, how bad could it have been? So.
Yeah. Well, we'll probably never know, or it'll come out in 20 years what the story was when somebody retires, but not super relevant at the moment.
Correct. Anyway.
What is interesting, you know, usually when we play games, we get inspiration. A lot of games draw inspiration from movies and TV. But recently, Star Trek's Picard series actually went the other direction. How did that work?
Well, I can tell you why. They needed some ideas because they botched the ending to season one. So the ending of Star Trek Picard season one had the whole Starfleet, spoiler alert, show up to combat the Romulans, and every single ship in the Starfleet like image, when they showed like the fleets, were all of Starfleet ships were identical. They were the exact same ship, right? Ooh. And the fans were like, where's the like Galaxy classes? Where's the Akira classes? Where's all of these other ships that the Federation is known for having varied designs for different things? They weren't there. And so in this first episode of season two, there was a big Starfleet and every ship was different. They had all these variety of ships that were different, like every single one of them. And so they probably had to get inspiration from something because they're unoriginal. Like, I'm going to go hard on Picard because I hate New Trek. I hate New Trek with a passion. And so they probably needed some ideas because they're freaking empty of ideas. They can't come up with their own original bullshit. So they had to pull from something that already existed. In my view, a lot of the stuff in Star Trek Online was already being considered canon anyway. So to see some of these designs show up in Picard, great, cool. You know, have some originality, Picard. Thank you. Moving on.
Robert Patterson, the former vampire, Pattinson, thank you. The former vampire, now Batman.
So vampires do turn into bats.
The rumor was true. So he commented on Tifa versus Eris, who were the two female love interests in Final Fantasy VII, of course. And his quote was, "This is how every guy figures out what love is. Deciding who you want more as Tifa or Eris."
So
I thought that was a pretty funny little quote.
Is it like that's the guy version of like team Edward versus team whatever from his movies or something? Is that what he's trying to say? I guess,
yeah.
Oh my god. Well then, Malefied, are you team Tifa or are you team Eris? Like, what are you?
I am definitely on team Tifa. I find Eris, like, she's just this weak sauce character. She's like whiny and not particularly strong character. I'm not a fan. So
I think
all the way.
I think most people who are attracted to women would probably say the same thing. So I'm probably gonna have to agree with you on that. That's all I'm getting at. So
yeah. Well, you know, and more power to you if you like her. Just not my taste.
Eris, yeah.
Yeah.
Well. What do we got here?
This next one cracked me up. Konami let the silenthill.com domain expire and somebody bought it.
Nice. You know, I feel like there's a slew of people that like prowl that stuff online. Do they just have some kind of a ticker just waiting for something to go up and then it pounce on it?
Yeah, well, and I don't even know how to like explain it, but they just put up, you know, sort of goofy stuff on the site and sort of made fun of Konami for not actually, you know, doing anything with Silent Hill for quite a while.
Well, you know what's funny is like if you read this article, there's a paragraph in here that says this isn't even the first time Konami forgot to do this. And in December of 2019, SilentHill.com was spot on sale for about $9,800, but nobody was quick enough to grab it before Konami. However, this time some cashed up troll in there. And now if you type SilentHill.com into your web browser of choice, you'll end up with a page showing a tweet from, I don't even know how to say that name. It says, "I wish I hadn't designed F in Pyramid Head," or whatever it is. So, that's
Masahiro
funny.
Ito, I think is how you say that. Yeah, he's the designer. Yeah.
So anyway, letting it lapse for a second time is kind of like maybe put a reminder on your calendar, or you know, I don't know.
You can register domains for 10 years, like. If this is a problem, maybe you should at least, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Let me ask you this real quick about something else. Seagate, what do you think of Seagate's hard drives? I've never really been a huge fan of Seagate's hard drives, but apparently they've been getting better over the years.
I have a number of their Exos drives, which is their enterprise class. And they've been, you know, good for me. They've been reliable. So I'll give credit where credit's due.
Would you be more inclined to buy their SSDs if they happen to look like Beskar ingots from The Mandalorian?
Well, I mean, who wouldn't, right? Like, I actually have a paperweight here that is a Beskar with the Imperial stamp emblazoned on it.
So. Wow, where the hell did you get that?
Etsy. Somebody made it.
That's really cool. So yeah, so Seagate is now selling Star Wars SSDs that look like Beskar ingots from The Mandalorian, along with the Imperial stamp on them as well. So there you go. Pretty cool. It does look pretty cool though. Not gonna lie.
It is a neat effect. Yeah, the one I have uses like brown rather than silver for the lines in it, which I don't think looks quite as cool. But yeah, I mean, it's a neat fun little thing. Now the question is, how much are they charging for this fancy case, right? Like if this is, you know, more than about $20, I can't imagine I'd feel it's worth it, especially because that SSD is in a computer somewhere. I'm not going to.
Right. So are you a Red Hot Chili Peppers fan?
I actually am. Yeah, they are very influential on me growing up. Big fan.
So, you know, their song Californication, they the music video was like someone made a video game, right? Of course, it wasn't a real video game, at least not at the time. But someone made that game from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and you can actually go and play it for free.
We can't beat the price. Yeah, I mean, this is just a fun little story. Like, they had this idea, and somebody brought it to life. It took 23 years, but hey, kind of cool.
Well, and it's on itch.io, so that's a pretty good place to put it. So there you go.
Yeah. So Mr. Kojima, the famed developer of Metal Gear Solid and more recently Death Stranding, says that a Bowie song holds the key to understanding Metal Gear Solid 5.
A Bowie song?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that's very cryptic. What does that mean?
Apparently, The Man Who Sold the World, a cover of David Bowie's famous song, is played in the hospital in the game. And he says, if you listen deeply to the lyrics, you can understand the structure of Metal Gear Solid 5.
Interesting. So
I guess maybe that's like a big hint to what was going on behind the scenes in his mind. But
who really knows what's going on in Kojima's mind, man? Like that guy.
Well, a very creative individual for sure.
I don't think anybody knows. He's like the Wes Anderson of video games. You know what I mean? Like he's very.
He's an interesting guy for sure.
On a different level.
Yes. So, do you remember we used to have these things that games came on and they were disc shaped and you put them in a thing in your computer? I mean, we haven't done that on the PC for what, 10 years?
Yeah, it's been a hot minute.
Certainly on consoles, that's still, you know, the primary delivery mechanism, but PCs generally don't have disc drives anymore. But Pioneer just released a 4K Blu-ray recorder or Ultra Blu-ray recorder for PC. So you can now write 128 gigabytes to a disc if you want.
Weird, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can also watch 4K Ultra Blu-ray discs on it, I guess. It's about $150. It records at 16x. So, you know, it's a thing you can do.
Well, according to Pioneer, they say the demand for optical discs and optical drives is actually expected to increase soon. So I don't know where that information is coming from, because especially with the age of hard drives actually decreasing in price as time goes on, this kind of makes me wonder where they're getting their trend, you know, market trend information from. So,
well, they do make a lot of disc related products, so maybe they're just seeing more demand on their end. But
I have a USB DVD player that's this tiny little thin thing that I use every now and then for maybe like if I have a retro game or a retro CD of some kind, I can slam in there. But like I haven't used it since like I installed my old copy of Elite Force before Elite Force became available on GOG. How is it?
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I used one. I gave away my last computer that had a DVD drive in it recently. So, I am disc free. And I do not own games on disc anymore. I have some 360 ones in the garage and like, you know, Wii games, but that's it. It's strange to think about discs being in demand. But the one thing I was going to say we talked about this earlier before we started the show. It's really hard to back up big amounts of data. And, you know, the only option really is to go to tape. If you want, you know, terabytes of data storage, you have to do, you know, a big LTO tape drive. So 128 gigs is a lot, but it's not that much. I mean, you still need 9 disks to back up a 1 terabyte drive, which seems insane to me.
Yes. No, I concur. I agree. I mean, this kind of harkens to, like, you know, they were making a joke that when like a new whatever game it is that comes out, I think what was it, like Star Citizen, when then Star Citizen comes out, like, you know, they'll have to sell it on its own SSD because of how large it's going to be or something like that. Like, and it just kind of made me chuckle at the idea of like the return to cartridges in the form of giant storage SSDs for a whole just one singular game. But like,
Call of,
you know,
Duty, we joked about that with Call of Duty.
Right. Well, and I was thinking too about, you know, like there was that transitional period, that trans time where like it was moving from CDs to DVDs for games. Mm-hmm. And so like you could buy, if like you didn't have a DVD player on your computer, you could buy like the CD copy of a game. So like, you could either get Call of Duty 2 on one DVD, or you could get it on 5 CDs or some shit like that. You know, it was like, you know, you'd have to swap out CDs all the time. So I still remember that period. That was an interesting period.
Microsoft shipped the modern flight simulator that just came out last year.
I saw that.
On discs, nine DVDs.
One of our community members, Dex, actually got one. He actually has a copy.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
DVD. He posted pictures of it. I was like, I can't believe that's still a thing. That blows my mind, really.
I wonder if that's like speaking to the audience who would play a flight simulator, maybe not being, you know, internet of centric, and they wouldn't want to do a digital download, so that's why they did a CD version or a DVD version.
That does make me wonder. Like, I just don't know where the I don't even know what to say to that. Like, I don't know where the market for that is. Like, it's just a hard thing to like think of, like, who does that really appeal to?
Yeah, well, and that's not trivial, right? You have to build packaging, you have to burn all the discs, you have to make sure you label them correctly. You don't want to ship, you know, 2 number 2s or by accident. That's not trivial. So wow. Well, speaking of something that is not trivial, Elden Ring player defeats boss with the Nintendo Ring Fit controller.
Why?
You know, I guess they were challenging themselves. This was a streamer, Super Lewis 64, and he had got his Ring Fit controller to work on PC, and yeah, he was playing Elden Ring with it. So
it kind of reminds me of those people who like play games with like the Guitar Hero guitars or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. There's the stories of like that kind of stuff. Just using wacky peripherals for whatever.
For sure, yeah. Is. That I mean, I can't even imagine what that must have been like. Wow. Kudos to him. So,
well, man, what have you been playing lately? What's been Mellified's go-to game of choice right now?
I have been very focused on Cyberpunk 2077. I have done all of the side quests. I'm finishing all of the gigs right now, and I am at the sort of final part of the story. That's why I'm doing all the side content before I finish up the story.
Interesting. I'm beginning to wonder if I need to start going and doing a whole bunch more of the side content, because I feel like I might not be at the high enough level to do some of the main storyline stuff, or at least unlocked enough of the things to do the mainline story. So there was maybe slightly spoilery, but there is a side mission for the AI car company guy, whatever that thing's called. Starts with a D, whatever the that name
is. Oh, Delos, Delamain.
Delamain. So there's the main one where you have to go around and collect all the cars for him. And then there's a follow-up. Mm-hmm. There's a follow-up to that where, like, you have to go and you're given two choices. You're either given a choice to purge all of the AI names by, like, resetting Delamain, or Johnny tries to get you to combine them all into one single consciousness, essentially. Well, in order to do that, I had to have a feat strength unlocked that I didn't have. So I could only choose one path. And I find that interesting.
There is a hidden third choice for that mission.
See, and I didn't even know that.
Right, because you're standing in front of the computer. This is total spoilers, by the way. Apologies if we caught you off guard there, but roll with us. You are standing in front of the computer. Johnny's telling you do the thing, and you have A or B. The third choice is you can shoot the computer core and destroy it. And that kills Delamain, but frees all of his children.
Wow.
Yeah. And Johnny likes that choice even better, as it turns out, although I don't know that that really matters. But the cool thing is, if you do that, you get a, well, in all these missions, you get a taxi cab. A Delamain taxi cab is one of your personal cars that you can summon. If you do the choice where you merge everybody back into one, he'll occasionally say something to you when you're in the car. If you do the choice where you free, where you kill Delamain and free all of his other personalities, the Delamain that helped you on the story mission early on, the Excelsior version of Delamain, becomes the driver, the AI in the car, and you get personal messages from the other 10 personalities or whatever it is throughout the rest of the game. So they'll, like, send you little love notes, like what they're doing and where they are and stuff. So, like, it's a way better, more interesting choice, I should say, because you have, like, extra content throughout the rest of the game.
Wow.
If you blow up the core. So
that's such an interesting thing. Like, see, I didn't even like think to try that. Like, that's not even.
To be clear, like, I got to that point and I was paralyzed by the choice, right? I couldn't decide. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go look up, like, what happens if I make this choice one way or the other. And that's when they're like, oh, and there's a third choice. And it's actually kind of the best one because you get all this extra content from the other AIs talking to you. And I was like, well, shit, why? I would have not thought of doing that ever. So that was really neat. But yeah, there's cool stuff in the game like that. I've done almost all of the gigs now, and, like, they're all different. They're all telling a story. It's not a big story, right? It may just be, hey, this person is stealing a Miltech hardware and reselling it, and you need to take them out. Or it might be, hey, this guy got kidnapped. Go rescue him. One of them, I had to go break a woman out of a mental institution. Now, a lot of these, you have the choice, right? It's very Deus Ex, where you can choose to go stealthy or you can choose to go loud, so to speak. My character goes stealthy until she gets noticed, and then the mantis blades come out and people start getting beheaded, because that's how I roll. But yeah, it's really fun to just go in and like try these different missions different ways. You can get in from the roof, you can get in from the back door, you can find a secret entrance underground. There's so many things that they've done with the level design to make it engaging as a player to go and explore and figure out, and you feel smart, right? Because you're like, oh, I can hack the back door if I have high enough hacking skill, or I can sneak under the floor in this one part to go through an air duct and pop up behind the guy that I need to take out or whatever. So, like, they've done a really good job, I think, of giving the player choices. That makes it so much more fun.
Yeah, I've I've been doing a couple of these missions where it just feels like there's some things that I like are missing, and so I feel like I need to go and do more of the side quest and gigs because I feel like I haven't unlocked stuff that might be beneficial to doing these like mainline story missions or stuff like that. So
I've been enjoying it. Yeah, well, I was going to say, so certainly this is not for everybody, I understand. But the very first thing that I did is I loaded up a cheat program and I changed all of my base stats to 20 because I don't like being locked out of those choices. It drives me crazy. And I don't want to do the quest if I'm going to be locked out of a choice. I want to have that option. So by doing that, I basically was able to see, you know, all the choices through the game. And I do that because I'm not going to replay the game. I have so many games on my backlog. I'm never going to replay a game. So if I'm going to go through it once, I want to get, you know, as much of the content out of the game as I can. So yeah, I that was my choice as single player game. I'm not hurting anybody.
Right.
But it, you know, I mean, I understand that that definitely wouldn't work for everybody.
And you see, in cases like that, I'm all for cheating if it's a single player game. Like have fun, like and enjoy it to your heart's content. I used to tell people back in the day, for me, when it came to like cheat codes and cheats like that, I tried not to use them until after I'd played through the game at least once. But depending on the game, sometimes you don't always have the luxury of doing that. Maybe you want to like just go ahead and go right through it. So
I may have mentioned this on a past show, but I was replaying Transistor, which was a really, really cool. Was it Big Giant Games? Big Super Giant Games? Really, really cool, very atmospheric game. And it had all these cool abilities that you got throughout the game. And I remember very, very clearly beating the game on, I don't even know, maybe it was PlayStation. and it basically told you, hey, you can start getting better versions of all these skills if you play New Game Plus. And I was like, well, shit, I want to do that. The game's cool. I like the skills. I want to check this out. And I never did. So I went back to play it again. And I was like, well, crap, I'm not going to play it on PlayStation. I want to play it on PC. So I cheated because I already beat the game. I've cheated my way through the game and tried to do it as quickly as possible to get to the New Game Plus so I could get to the stuff I wanted to try out that was new. And as it turned out, by the time I beat the game a second time, I wasn't really interested in doing New Game Plus anymore. So it was sort of self-defeating, perhaps. But I'm at least poised, if I choose, to go back and do the New Game Plus, I can do it. So cheating, you know, was a nice shortcut for me there. But, you know, I get the purists. I understand people don't like want to do that. And certainly I found that cheating on some games ruins them because there's nothing to keep you going on the game other than the level grind, or, you know, the story is not interesting enough to keep me engaged. So once I cheat, there's not really much to do. But for me, the thing that I like about cheating is it lets me get past parts of the game that I don't like or that I found tedious, right? RPGs and grinding is a big one for me. I just hate it. And so if I get into that position, I can give myself 5 levels and skip that grind and basically go, you know, right to the next part. So it's not for everybody, but it definitely works for me, I guess.
Yeah, and see, like I said, and things like that, that's fine. But like GTA Online is the one that really kind of ticks me off. You just have all these people that go around and they're cheating and hacking, and it's just like it ruins the other people in the world's like time. This is why, yes, I really wish that like Rockstar would have come out and like really supported kind of like the Fallout 76 kind of like system, or like where you can almost pay for your like your own like private instance world or something like, yeah, that. So that way you're not really messing with or ruining somebody else's experience. You know, you're just doing it for yourself and your friends who maybe want to join you. So yeah, I think I finally just am now getting that that application downloaded that you sent me the other day.
Oh, from cheathappens.com, their new unified cheating tool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really neat because it's basically gives you one place to go and you can see all the cheats that they have available. They have an interesting, you know, sort of business model. There is a lifetime subscription option, which at least used to be $60. It may have gone up in price, but you know, for the price of one game, basically you get access to everything that they do. And to me, that was worth it because, you know, I know that I'm not getting something shady from a pirate site. These guys have a reputation. They've been around for a number of years. I'm not going to get, you know, a backdoor installed on my computer using their stuff. And for the most part, I think everything that I've tried from them just works. Every once in a while, you know, the game gets an update and it takes them a day or two to like catch up. But they're generally very, very fast. I'm amazed. In fact, when a new game comes out, they already have a cheat out in some cases. And I'm like, how did you get the game? How did you figure out what to cheat so quickly? But, you know, again, like games where you have to grind, even Aliens Fireteam, right? If you really like one class and you're going to play that game a ton, you can level up, you know, pick your favorite gun, level it up. But the game has, what, five classes, all of which have levels, and every gun that you can choose has a level. And you have to play a fair bit of Fireteam to level up all that.
Yeah, you do.
Not interested. Just, I'll say that. I have zero interest in spending the time doing that. So I went through and cheated and just maxed out all my classes and all my guns.
And that works on online?
Well, you play single player, right? And you do that and it's saved to your character locally. And then when you load that character up in multiplayer, it's all unlocked.
You son of a gun.
Yeah. You can also do it with all the currency for the, like all the cosmetics that are in the store. You can buy, you can get, you know, cheat yourself the currency and just go buy all the cosmetics. Rather than having to like grind them out. But like I said, I just have very little patience for grinding because I only have so much time to game. I've gotten older. I have kids. I have responsibilities. And there are games that I love that I will sit there and grind. Persona 5 Royale being a great example, right? I played the whole game 100 hours of Persona 5. And then I played the whole game again with the Royale content, which was another 150 hours. And I loved every minute of it. I just enjoy that game. I enjoyed the characters. I enjoyed the combat. But, you know, Aliens Fireteam, I just want to go and shoot some aliens. And I want to be able to play with different guns. And I want to be able to, like, play with different character designs. Because they have that whole plug-in system where you add different skills. And you have to unlock those different skills, again, by grinding out levels. So I really was, you know, much happier with the game, being able to kind of skip to the end and just be able to play with all the cool stuff. So yeah, I you know, I'm not for everybody, but one thing I always love to say is that, you know, game designers can be jerks, right? They game designers can make choices that are negative for the player or hostile to the whether that's hiding cool stuff in like super difficult to reach locations. Some people get, you know, really enjoy that. The skulls on Halo. I remember people would play, you know, through all the different campaign missions to find all the skulls so they could unlock stuff. But, you know, for me, a lot of times I just don't want to spend the time to do all that. So no, Halo I did, but you know, that was worth it to me. But a lot of other games, I don't want to mess around, so give me all the cool stuff.
Nice. Well, we're 3 months into 2022 now.
Where did the time go?
No kidding. What are some of the upcoming games that you're kind of like looking forward to? Is there anything coming out this year that you're like, yes, can't wait to get my hands on that?
I haven't played it yet. It just came out. But the WWE 2022 game, last year's installment was a disaster, right? And supposedly they, you know, kind of went back to the drawing board and really tried to improve this version. I enjoy kind of the wrestling combat. I enjoy hitting people with chairs, jumping on them, you know, from the turnbuckle, all that kind of stuff. So definitely interested to mess around with that and create my own wrestler and do, you know, silly stuff with him. I have a huge, I am a huge fan of the, I'm trying to remember the name of the game. I'm looking it up. The Warhammer 40K universe. I love Warhammer.
Oh, stuff. Yeah, yeah, Warhammer, yeah.
40K. So Chaos Gate Demon Hunters is the XCOM, air quotes, XCOM Warhammer 40K game that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks super cool to me. Definitely looking forward to that one. You know, I love the idea of like XCOM with Space Marines.
Yeah, you posted that Space Marine like getting armored up video.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a little bit reminiscent of the old StarCraft II video. Of course, StarCraft II was the one who ripped off the Space Marines from Warhammer. But
yes, they did.
But you know, it's funny that StarCraft II did their video of that years ago, and then we finally get to see kind of the Warhammer one. The Warhammer one is definitely more dark and yes, gloomy, yes, and a little intense maybe at times.
Creepy
would be another word. Though those flying baby angel robot things were a little much for me, but
cherubs, right? They're like the Renaissance era, the cherubs are always like floating around in art and stuff, and so that's, they did like a creepy version for Warhammer.
Yeah, creepy is correct. And it was cool though. It was a good video. I'm definitely a fan. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy me some Warhammer stuff. Yeah, for sure. So
yeah, well, and there's another one coming out. Kill Team is the, it's the guys who did Vermintide, their Warhammer 40K version of Vermintide, and that one looks really cool too because it's 4-player co-op, which sounds super fun to get in there and just, you know, start unloading some bolters into Tyranids and having some fun. Let's see. I'm going to give you a weird, and you're going to laugh at me, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to send you the link here in our Discord. I'm going to drop it in the discussion channel here. So,
oh boy.
Wales Interactive is kind of found their niche with FMV games. And I do not like some of them, the older ones in particular, because they don't allow you to skip the stuff you've already seen. So you end up watching the same parts of the storyline over and over and over if you want to play through and see like all the different endings. But with the more modern ones, they've actually, you know, figured all that out. You can skip the stuff after you've seen it. Sorry, I'm smacking my microphone as I'm waving my hands around, gesturing emphatically. So this is their next game. It's coming out in a couple days. And, you know, it looks fun. It looks silly and kind of goofy. But I like enjoy that kind of slightly cheesy FMV acting. It's actually got, you know, some actors that you're going to be like, oh, yeah, I know that dude. I've seen him and stuff. So, you know, it looks kind of fun. And this one's a murder mystery. Somebody poisoned Uncle Marcus, and you got to kind of quiz the family members to figure out who took him out. So,
yeah. So the game is called Who Pressed Mute on Uncle Marcus. That's I mean, you know what? It's I'm going to be honest. It's kind of cool to see somebody actually still making FMV games today. That's
some of them are not good. Like,
sure,
I will be upfront, but some of them are fun.
But the point is the fact that they're still being made is, I guess, really where I'm getting at with that. So it's really slick that someone's still making them, at least good or not.
If you wanted to start with one, there's one called The Complex, that is by the same folks, and I think that's probably their best one that I've played all the way through. It has, oh my gosh, I'm going to forget her name. What is her name? Oh my gosh, I can see her face. I'm looking at her now. I got to scroll down here and figure out who her name is. This is great podcast. Michelle Milet. She's in Letterkenny and Bad Blood. Kate Dickey from Game of Thrones, Witch, both of whom you would recognize, I suspect. It's a really neat story about a bioweapon attack. They're trapped in a research lab and they have to figure out how to get out. And there's 8 different endings that vary, you know, dramatically in what happens and how things wrap up. And like, I enjoyed the heck out of it. I really thought it was a cool story. It was engaging. It was interesting. I actually like was upset about one of the characters dying, which, you know, says they got their hooks in you, right? You got right. That engaged in the story that you care what happens. So that would be my suggestion if you wanted to dip your toe in this world, to start with The Complex from Wales Interactive.
Nice.
What about you? What's one that you're excited
about? I've actually got a couple. Okay. Because I'm a huge sci-fi nerd, I am really, really looking forward to Dune Spice Wars. I'm a big fan of the Dunes. The 1980s movie is visually impressive, but they kind of really mess up the story, especially in the second half, more than anything. Then Sci-Fi Channel had a few different miniseries that they did that were really good, I thought. And then, of course, I really loved this new one. It was a very good adaptation of the content, I felt like. For what it was, it was very good. So I'm looking forward to what they do with number 2 there. But I think after like the year 2000 or like something, you know, or in the early 2000s, we never got any more Dune games. And so the resurgence of a new Dune kind of like 4X-y strategy style kind of game almost. I don't know if it's exactly 4X, but it definitely is a strategy game for sure. And maybe like an economy strategy game. It looks really good. And I'm really looking forward to trying that one out. But that's supposed to come out later this year.
You know, it's funny that you bring that up. And when I know you said Dune, but for some reason in my brain, I heard Starship Troopers, because we've got a new Starship Troopers game coming.
Yes, we do, actually.
And it's a strategy game called Starship Troopers Terran Command. It's by Matrix Games, who do a lot of strategy stuff. And it's supposed to be coming out in the next couple months, I believe. But the idea of like commanding mobile infantry, RTS style, fighting, you know, all the giant bug swarms and stuff just sounds like super fun to me. So I'm interested in that one for sure.
And then another one that's coming out that I think I'm probably the most excited for this, because the track record for this IP actually getting games out that are good and that stay out is one or less than one.
Oh no.
And okay. It's got nothing to do with the IP and everything to do with licensing and politics and blah blah blah. And that game is Stargate Timekeepers.
Yes.
Stargate Timekeepers is supposed to be a real-time tactics game, so it's kind of like an XCOM-y style game, from what I understand, where you lead a team of specialists through a story-driven campaign set in the SG-1 universe, and you sneak your characters behind enemy lines, use their unique skills, and craft the perfect plan to unravel a time loop mystery and defeat the Gould threat. I love everything about that description. So I'm really excited for it. So like Stargate, there was a period of time where Stargate with MGM was in its height, and they were working on a Stargate MMO, a Stargate shooter game. There was a Stargate game back in the 90s on Super Nintendo and Sega, I believe, based on the original movie. And I think there was another one that came out on the Sega Saturn, I think. That was kind of like a rail shooter, maybe. But I'll have to look that one up. I'm not 100% sure on that one. But the actual games that have been released under the Stargate IP have been like one to none. So the third-person action shooter that was, it's kind of like Stargate but Quake, was short-lived because the assets that were used for it were supposedly, allegedly taken from the canceled MMO that they did. And so there was kind of like a rights holder licensing issue of who actually owned those assets when the game was out. So the game was only out for about a year before they were like, well, there's question on who actually owns this. And so then they canned it. And what's funny is you can see some of the content from those games. A couple of the episodes of Stargate SG-1, they were used as a, There was actually an episode called The Game, if I'm not mistaken, where Teal'c gets stuck in this like virtual reality thing, and on the monitors they have a mock-up of what it is that he's seeing, and it's actually like alpha footage of the game in development. So they were at one point really working on some Stargate content that just never actually came to fruition. And so Slytherin is going to be the publisher of this, and it's being developed by a company called Creative Forge. And there's a whole bunch of screenshots and information on Steam. And so I'm really looking forward to that one. I'm really hoping that there's no actual release date for this year, but I'm pretty sure it's probably going to come out sometime this year. At least that's what I hope. So.
Very much in the same vein of IPs that have had a string of questionable games. Terminator Dark Fate Defiance is another RTS that is coming out where you are playing one of three human factions in the future fighting against the machine in the Terminator universe.
Also being developed by Slytherin and published by Slytherin. So
yeah. I hope you like gray if you play it, because all of the screenshots are like these gray bombed out cities. There's no color at all, which maybe not the best first impression, but I love the Terminator universe, at least the early Terminator universe. I'm not as big a fan of the newer stuff, but you know, this one still has potential. Seems like it could be fun. So I'm looking forward to that. Slytherin has one more coming out that's kind of interesting. Master of Magic, which is a throwback to the early DOS days classic turn-based strategy game. They're remaking that, which could be a lot of fun.
Well, Slytherin also just published a game that was released here just recently called Distant Worlds 2. And I've got a copy of that that I need to, I've had that pre-ordered for some time, quite a while actually now. And it's getting mostly positive reviews on the Steams. And so I'm looking forward to digging my teeth into Distant Worlds 2.
I played it for like an hour over lunch the other day when it first came out. And my thing on those strategy games like Stellaris or Galactic Civilization is biggest galaxy, you know, just make it as huge as possible. Cause I want to, you know, feel like I'm in a real universe. And I started at the pre-warp level, which is the earliest level you can start at in Distant Worlds 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it was very slow paced at the default pacing. I talked to somebody online, and strategy Discord, who said if you start, you know, later on in the technology choices, there's I think five different choices, it goes a little bit faster because you're not having to wait for your civilization to kind of catch up. But that would be, you know, very, very early hot take, I guess, is that it felt very slow paced to me. Like I was just waiting for stuff to happen a lot, which I don't love. So your mileage may vary, I guess.
Mileage may vary. Well, that'll about... Well, what else do you got?
There's one more I know that you're waiting for. which is, we talked about last episode, was Star Wars, the Skywalker saga.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah, I really like what I'm seeing from all the information that's been coming out about that. Like, I am really excited for that one. I think it's going to be a nice fresh take on the genre and a nice fresh take on that specific IP of that genre. So,
I love that you can actually fight the you know, fly an X-wing and shoot down TIE fighters. They've added that is new to the series.
Well, sorta, but yeah.
Well, I guess maybe there was like a few missions, but it seemed like they were making a bigger deal of it in this one. But.
Yeah, I think in Lego Star Wars 3, there was more emphasis on the ship combat stuff, maybe, is where it is. So I think they're finally adding in more of that throughout all of this now. So that's good.
Yeah. But it definitely, you know, it is such a fun take on the classic Star Wars stuff that you remember from seeing the movies and the shows. It's just neat to play the Lego games because they're kind of, you know, tongue in cheek and very silly and having fun with it at the same time. So definitely cool.
Well, I think that'll about wrap us up, man.
Cool.
This has been fun chatting with everybody. Head on over to our Discord where you can continue these conversations and more at discord.otherworlds.gg. Got plenty going on over there, so come and check it out. And we'll definitely see you guys in the next episode. I believe this has been episode number 53. See you guys next time.
Yeehaw.